spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Yal, was written by Mark Siegel. It is presented as part of the recent celebration of the 100th anniversary of the birth of I.L. Peretz, the father of modern Yiddish literature.
His full name was Isaac Labusch Peretz, but we who knew him in Warsaw called him Yal, a combination of the initials of his Jewish name, Yitzchok Labusch. I want to tell you about Yal the man, not Peretz the writer. Peretz was a literary genius, but Yal was the beating heart of Poland's Jewry. Yal was born in Zamość, the little Paris of Poland. Now, it's enough of a miracle when any child is born, isn't it? But Yal, he was a prodigy from the start. He was a Hebrew scholar at the age of 3. At 6, he could read and interpret the Talmud like an old man. At 9, he was fluent in 4 languages. And by the time he was 12, he was driving his mother to distraction.
Reb Moshe! Have you seen my son?
What? He's run away again?
Again. And only an hour before time to light the candles for the Sabbath.
When you find him, punish him. That's what he needs.
He's too bright to punish. When we punish him, he tells us we're punishing ourselves. And he's right. Michael. A moment, please, Michael.
Yes, Rebecca.
Michael, have you seen Yitzchok Labusch?
No, Rebecca, but I can tell you where he is.
Well, then why waste your time and mine? Quickly, where is he?
To try the river.
The river?
Not in the river, near the river. You'll find him in the meadow.
How do you know he's in the meadow near the river? You just said, I heard you say with my own ears, you haven't seen him.
A boy like Yitzchok, where would he be but lying in the meadow by the river?
All right, I'll go there. But since you're so clever, what's he doing lying in the meadow by the river?
What should he be doing? He's lying in the grass, naturally, listening to the angels who stand beside each blade.
Uh-huh. And what are the angels saying that he can hear it?
The angels are saying to each blade of grass, and to your son, too, grow. Grow.
He was a dreamy child, growing too rapidly, and his soul mirrored the many conflicts of his time. He rebelled against the rigid atmosphere of his home, but having discarded the old, he was uncertain as to what was the new. He suffered as only a brilliant adolescent who has lost his faith can suffer. He would lie awake in bed, ridden by his doubts and fears. And when his terror grew too great, he would leap from bed, twist open the window, and dart out into the square.
Who is it? Who's there?
Let me in, Michael.
It's Huck Labusch. What are you doing here at this time of night?
I couldn't sleep, Michael. I was afraid.
Come in, then. Come in. Here, I'll get you a cup of tea.
I didn't come here for tea.
Well, then for what?
Because I'm afraid, Michael. Because I don't know any more what to believe.
Well, in these times, Yitzchok, who knows what to believe?
Everyone has something to believe. Reb Moshe in the House of Study believes if you study the Talmud day after day, have a long face, go to the synagogue 3 times a day, you've fulfilled your duty before God. But Reb Shloimeh believes you must not only be pious, but that you must dance and sing. They're both so sure.
And which one is right, Yitzhak? Reb Moshe or Reb Shloimeh?
Maybe they're both wrong. Michael, do you believe in God?
May heaven forgive me. What a question. Of course I believe in God.
Does God control the world?
Well, of course he controls the world.
Did I ask to be born? When I leave the world, will it be because I want to go?
No, son. God will decide.
He decides everything?
No, no, he decides some things.
How do you know what God decides?
Well, no one can answer that precisely, Yitzhak.
Why does he make people suffer?
Yitzhak, you cannot inquire into the ways of God.
Why can't you inquire into the ways of God, Michael? In Warsaw, do they inquire into the ways of God?
There are people who try, but I don't think they'll succeed.
Michael, other people. People who don't live in the ghetto. What do they believe?
I think they struggle with the same problems, Yitzhak.
If I knew what they thought, if I could read their books.
Yes, then?
Then maybe I could find the answers.
No, Yitzhak.
Oh.
Oh, now listen to me. I, too, have searched for answers. Now I'm old. Yes, study, learn, search for knowledge. But as you search, remember, learning alone will not answer the questions inside you. Man has a brain, but man was created also with a heart. Man cannot live without a heart.
Michael the Fiddler was a man of many parts, and when he died, he left a legacy to Yao. A rusty key to an attic library of books from the world beyond the ghetto. Yao's knowledge of world history and literature, of science and philosophy grew. Yet he did not always follow the cult of clear reason. One day, Yao, now grown to young manhood, and a friend were at a fair in Leshna. To escape the summer heat, they walked into a cool wine shop.
Yes, gentlemen. What will you drink?
A glass of wine, please. And you, Nahum?
The same.
In a moment.
Oh, a fine-looking girl.
Parrot, you've been single too long.
No. She has a soul. You can see it in her eyes.
But you're a law student. An observation like that wouldn't stand up in court, and you know it.
Well, happily, Nahum, this is no court of law.
Your wine, gentlemen.
Thank you. Will you join us, Miss...
Ringelheim. No, thank you. I don't drink.
Never?
Well, only on special occasions. At celebrations.
Well, this is a celebration, Gutele. You did say your name was Gutele, didn't you?
No, I said my name was Ringelheim.
Just Ringelheim? Oh, Miss Nothing Ringelheim.
No, Helena. Helena Ringelheim.
Well, have a drink with us, Helena Ringelheim.
Now, stop bothering the girl parents. You just heard her say she drinks only on special occasions.
Ah, this is a special occasion, Nahum. I'm about to ask Miss Helena Ringelheim to become my wife.
Yao married Helena 4 days later. It was a good marriage. He took his bride back to Zamosh, paid off his debts, and began to practice law. Day by day, his practice grew. In the evenings, he played chess with Nahum.
There. That's that.
That's what?
The game, Nahum.
I don't see it.
Now, look here. If you take the knight, I take your queen.
Hmm?
If you don't take the knight, I move my rook to king's bishop 4, and you're checkmated.
On the one hand, I lose, and on the other hand, I lose. Is that it?
If you work at it, to win is easy, Nahum.
You should know, Parrots. You always do.
Hmm. At chess.
And in the law courts.
Yes, in the law courts, too.
And where do you lose?
Inside, now.
Parrots, when you argue a case, you're brilliant. But as soon as you start to talk about yourself...
What man understands himself? Nahum, When I was a boy here in Samosh, there was a wonderful old man who was my friend. Once he said to me, "A man cannot live without a heart." Nahum, I'm 35 years old and I'm living without a heart.
Peretz, you're not being fair to yourself. You're...
All around us there's injustice, persecution. I sit here and play chess.
Every time you stand up in court, you resist injustice.
Yes, as an individual. But Nahum, a man isn't a free dot in the universe. He's one ringlet of a net, and the net is his generation and his people. If I struggle, it's a lonely struggle.
Lonely? You have Helena. You have your friends. Your home.
Nahum, I'll ask you a riddle. If I have my home, if I really have my home, how is it that I feel homesick?
In 1887, acting on an anonymous complaint of anti-Russian statements against Isaac Labush Peretz, the Minister of Justice of the Government of His Imperial Majesty the Tsar ruled that Yal should be denied the right to practice law. The case was appealed in St. Petersburg.
Your Excellency, in the case of my colleague I.L. Peretz, may I ask if there is any act in his record as a lawyer for which his license has been revoked?
Advocate, this is not a cross-examination. If you have anything to say in behalf of this Peretz, say it and be done.
Yes, Your Excellency. For 10 years, he has pursued the practice of law. His ethics are beyond question. His performance is one of great ability.
You say his conduct has been good?
Exemplary.
And he is an able attorney.
Among the ablest.
So much the better then, Advocate. Russia will then have one able lawyer less.
The Minister of Justice could not have known that his decision would give life to a new movement, that he was guiding a misdirected genius into a channel which would bring heart and courage to all the Jews of Poland. Yal and Helena came to Warsaw, the center of Jewish intellectual life. It was there that he began to write seriously. I liked him from the start and admired his work. We disagreed only on one point.
Write in Yiddish, Jakob? In jargon? No, never.
But right now, Yiddish is the language our people understand.
You prefer it good, but not for me. I write in Hebrew, Jakob. Yiddish is impossible for artistic purposes.
There are purposes higher than purely artistic purposes.
Such as?
Such as those you've begun to recognize. Such as the education of 3 million Jews in Poland.
I believe in education. But I will continue to write in Hebrew.
Oh, Peretz, how can you be so brilliant and so stubborn?
You call it stubbornness, Jakob. I call it willpower.
The result is the same. You're writing in a vacuum.
That's not true, Jakob. I'm writing of the most urgent problems of our people. The problems
as
of all of us...
As an intellectual, Peretz. You write about the people's problems, but you really don't feel them. Until you come face to face with these problems, you will meander through our time, offering nothing, solving
meander.
Nothing.
I don't understand.
You're neither one thing or another. You satirize tradition and reject modernism as lifeless. You believe the Jews of Poland have special problems. Good, but you concern yourself with the problems of the Polish people. You pay lip service to education, but you write in a language only intellectuals understand.
In short, Jakob, I'm an impossible mixture.
Hmm? I wouldn't put it that strongly.
It's all right, Jakob. I've been an impossible mixture for 35 years. But I've begun to think that it was meant to be that way. That out of the extremes there may come a middle ground. A path down which I can walk with acceptance and with pride. And perhaps, Jakob, there will be others who will follow.
In 1888, Yal needed a job badly. I helped him get one as a traveling statistician on an expedition to determine the condition of Poland's Jews. In the little provincial towns, he was not greeted with immediate trust.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning.
What is your name, friend?
Levy.
Your last name.
Why do you want to know?
Well, is it a secret?
Secret or no secret, you may as well tell me why you want to know, or is that a secret?
Well, I'm gathering statistics.
Ah, statistics. We've heard that before. We know what that means.
What does it mean?
It means more taxes. That's what it means.
No, not these statistics.
And why do you ask Berenpulse how he lives? With a floor or without a floor? What does it matter to you if a person lives in a room without a floor?
It matters. Some people want to show how poor the Jews are, how hard it is for a Jew in Poland to get along.
My friend, take my word for it. To prove that, you don't need statistics.
Your name?
Chaim.
And your business, Chaim?
What business?
What do you live on?
One just lives.
On what?
God's providence. When he gives something, one has it.
No, what do you do all day?
I do what they let me do. I run errands, I carry coal.
You have no trade?
What good is a trade? You're not allowed to practice it. Look, I'll answer all your questions at once, and you can go back to Warsaw. Neither I nor any one of the Jews in this village has any money. Therefore, we live as God wills, and have lived so all our lives. And if there is a child to be married, we have a wedding and dance in the mud.
Hello. Is your mother here?
There. On the bed.
Oh, it's cold in here. Why don't you light a fire?
There's been no fire in our chimney for a month.
Where's your father? Oh, I'm sorry. Have you eaten today?
Yes. Potato peeling.
Oh, potato peeling. Nothing else, huh?
And one onion.
Look, I have a few dryers in my pocket. Can I get you something?
Yes, thank you.
Good. What do you want?
Please, sir. May you have health and strength. Could I have another onion?
Jakob, what good are the statistics?
Perhaps they're no good, y'all.
Can they answer the question, how many empty stomachs? How many people starving for a crust of dry bread?
You've seen it, y'all. Now you know.
Yes, I know. I shut my eyes and I see them. Neglected children, babies screaming their throats out in cradles. Sick people unattended. Jakob, something must be done.
May we have the strength to do it.
What I've seen, that alone will give me the strength.
I don't understand, y'all. You've come back with a report of poverty and starvation.
Those are the external conditions, Jakob. And yet our people survive scorn and hunger and brutality. Why? Because they have an inner light. Behind the sad faces there is a shining faith. Their faith is the reservoir from which we shall draw our strength.
Yes, but, Jarl, I've known that. I've always known it.
Well, it's more, Jakob, than that we should draw our strength from them. We must also help them realize how powerful their faith is. How the strength which lies within them can better their conditions.
That's not so easy, y'all.
No, it's not easy, Jakob. And yet, for the first time in my life, I know what I must do. If I fail, I will at least fail as a servant of my people, but not in isolation. And, Jakob, I owe you an apology.
An apology? For what, y'all?
For not realizing that to reach our people, I must write in the language they understand. From this day on, Jakob, I do not confine myself to Hebrew. I will write also in Yiddish. I shall make the language of captivity speak in the cause of liberty.
Jarl was 37 when he made his debut in Yiddish. So that he could go on writing, he found a job with the Gemeinde, the Warsaw Jewish community. He became clerk of the mortuary department. 6 days a week, from 9 to 3, he recorded the deaths of his people. But in the afternoons and through the nights, his pen spoke life and renaissance. It also spoke justice and freedom, ideals not popular with the Russian censor.
Now look here, Peretz, I've been lenient with you up to now.
Yes, Your Honor.
But I must warn you, you're beginning to anger, annoy me.
What have I done?
These last stories, these stories about the prophet Elijah, these are nothing but propaganda.
Your Honor, these stories are hundreds of years old. I'm only retelling them.
Telling or retelling? You can't go on glorifying the poor and denouncing the wealthy.
Wealth is only a pledge entrusted to mortals, Your Honor. It can be retained forever, if proper use is made of it.
That's just the kind of statement I'm talking about. I warned you, Peretz. Mind your commas and your periods.
Yes, Your Honor.
And Peretz, no more of these series of dots behind which you conceal your thoughts. Their meaning does not escape me.
Your Honor, you flatter me.
Flatter you? How?
When people understand what I write, I'm pleased. But when they understand even what I don't write, Your Honor, I must admit it, then I'm flattered.
Whether it was what Yarl wrote or didn't write, he was understood. In his little Hasidic tales and in his poems and essays, 3 million Polish Jews found a mirror of their faith. His reputation grew, and as the years passed, his home on Siglana Street became a kind of university for a whole new generation of younger writers.
But, Yarl, how can you do it? How can you separate the plight of the Jewish people from that of the Polish masses?
You can't, Schleimer.
Then your hope is with the partisans of reform.
They are my hope, Schleimer, yes. But they are also my fear.
Why should you fear them?
When the oppressed are victorious, they sometimes turn into oppressors, and every oppressor sins against the human spirit.
Yarl, the real answer to the problems, isn't the answer in Palestine?
Schleimer, I feel the pull of Zion. But even if Zion is reborn, millions of Jews will continue to live among other peoples. These Jews must be citizens of the lands of their domicile. They must participate in the life of the people in whose midst they remain.
Yarl, I have still another question.
Ask it, Schleimer.
Don't you really think Yiddish should be the Jewish national tongue?
No, I do not, Schleimer. I choose to write in Yiddish because right now 3 million Jews understand no other language. But abandonment of Hebrew would be like severing the roots of the tree to which they belong.
But, Yarl, many of us seek a common ground.
I don't know quite how to explain it. It wasn't only writers and intellectuals who came to put their faith in Yarl. Somehow, all of Poland's Jews came to feel that this one man, this little roly-poly man with a big head and the soft, sad eyes, had faced all their problems and come up with answers born of a deep faith in his own Jewishness and in theirs. On April 3rd, 1915, Yarl went out of his office in the Gemeinde. He'd been working, overworking, in behalf of Jewish refugees displaced by the World War. He promised to write a poem to aid the children of a refugee orphan asylum. He sat down at his desk and began to write.
Softly, softly, about to give thanksgiving, he...
We found him, a smile on his face, his pen in hand. I said I would tell you about Yarl the man, not Peretz the writer. It was the funeral of Yarl the man that 150,000 Jews of Warsaw attended. From noon to 7 o'clock at night, they followed Yarl through the streets. All kinds of Jews, from all walks of life. Scholars, dreamers, Talmudists, aged men, children, simple artisans, Zionists, vagabonds, men of affairs and the paupers of the street. They followed him with wet eyes and with painful hearts. He was their pleader and defender. He was the poet of the Jewish soul and the dreamer of a time of justice still to come.
Today, everybody must plow, sow, and cultivate his own patch of earth. Although, or rather because, we hope for a morrow in which there will be a common granary for mankind. The time will come. The time must come. The thunderstorms will pass away, and the earth will give us its strength, and the heavens will give us their warmth and light. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Elmer Hamburg of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, member of the Board of Overseers of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America and prominent civic and communal leader. Mr. Hamburg.
Today's Eternal Light drama has been a tribute to the memory of Isaac Loeb Peretz, the man, his work, and his enduring faith and belief in the ideals of freedom. Not only was Peretz a writer of folk tales, drama, and poetry, but he was an educator and a social worker for the Jewish people. His writing was a new way of describing the economic and spiritual life of the Jews in Eastern Europe. A man of the people, Isaac Loeb Peretz incorporated in his life and customs of the Jews around him into his stories and his poems. He preserved, in both the Yiddish and Hebrew language, the richness of the trials and hopes of these men and women. In today's story, we knew Yaal as a brilliant and inquiring child, as a devoted and preserving lawyer, as a thinker, a man whose burdens were the burdens of the world and of the Jewish people. Peretz, the writer, delved into the heart of humanity. He wrote again and again of his love for the custom and ceremony inherent in the traditions of Judaism. He appealed to the Jews to leave the ghettos behind them and to join in the flux of the modern world. His hope for human progress and his concern for the future of the world as well as the Jewish people made him a great universal writer. Peretz was a mixture of the spirit of the old and the hope of the new. Even though more than half a century has elapsed since he last laid down his pen, even though his world was the world of the ghetto, his work still has great meaning for us today because he was concerned with the basic truths of life. His love for people and his ideals transcend all barriers of language and time. He achieves immortality by living in our memory, not only as the father of modern Jewish literature, but also as a symbol and the spirit of Judaism and of freedom for all mankind.
Thank you, Mr. Hamburg. Our Eternal Light drama today, Yaal, was written by Mark Siegel. Featured in the cast were Norman Rose as Yaal and Alexander Scorby as Jacob. The liturgical introduction was sung by cantor Robert Siegel. The music was written by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Catons. The production was under the direction of Edward King. This is Mel Brandt speaking. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
NBC, the nation's headquarters for election news.